This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, September 9th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, Boulder City Council will be looking at how to allocate federal funds received through the American Rescue Plan Act. We'll get the details from Boulder Beat's Shea Castle. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has a new COVID screening program for schools. It's free and includes incentives. And we'll take a peek at the Sojourners Project, an interactive theater project premiering tonight in Denver. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. Then it's a public affair. In the first half, we'll revisit the Attica prison uprising on its 50th anniversary. Then at 9 a.m., I'll speak with Jennifer Wilson, Executive Director of the International Rescue Committee. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. First, we'll start with the headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
The Colorado Department of Health and Environment has released data sets which compare COVID cases for vaccinated and unvaccinated patients. As of August 15th, state data indicates fully vaccinated individuals are almost four times less likely to be hospitalized as compared to individuals not fully inoculated. State data as of July also shows the risk of death from COVID is almost six times higher for those who are unvaccinated. In yesterday's media briefing, the CDPHE also presented data on breakthrough cases by vaccine, with Moderna shots showing the fewest number of breakthrough cases and the one-dose Johnson & Johnson showing the most. Boulder City Council is expected to consider extending an emergency order today, allowing some downtown establishments to continue expanded outdoor dining into the street. The current order ends August 31st and is expected to continue until April 1st. The Daily Camera reports the city is also exploring if an outdoor dining pilot program should be continued post-pandemic. The Colorado Supreme Court will not hear a lawsuit from the Daily Camera newspaper that challenges the University of Colorado's refusal to disclose the finalists for the school president's job. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
On Wednesday, the Daily Camera reported that the court had denied its lawsuit. The Colorado Open Records Act law requires a finalist's identity be publicly disclosed. The Camera had asked the court, under that law, to determine who was considered a finalist for chief executive jobs of all publicly funded government entities. The Associated Press reports that the court's decision, in spite of the law, the university and other government entities should be allowed to shield information from disclosure. The Daily Camera sued in 2019, seeking the names of six finalists interviewed by the Board of Regents to replace the retiring university president, Bruce Benson. The job went to Mark Kennedy, who was the only candidate publicly identified by the university. The Colorado legislature had passed a bipartisan bill allowing certain government entities looking for a chief executive to release just a single finalist. Supporters of that bipartisan bill said government agencies lose talented candidates when they know their names will be publicized. Opponents, including the Colorado Press Association, say the public has a right to know who is being considered for a taxpayer-financed government position. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
The city of Loveland has agreed to pay a $3 million settlement to an elderly woman with dementia violently arrested by local police last year. The arrest was over $14 worth of merchandise the woman allegedly took from a Walmart. During the arrest, the Loveland police officers threw the woman to the ground, broke her arm, and dislocated her shoulder. Later, as officers reviewed body cam footage of the arrest, police department video monitoring shows the officers laughing when hearing the sound of the shoulder dislocation. According to the Denver Post, the officers, who are no longer with the department, still face criminal charges, and the incident has brought about a third-party investigation into the police department. Also in Loveland, the 8th Judicial District Attorney's Office announced yesterday that a 19-year-old who was shot by a Loveland police officer while he was having a mental health crisis has died. On August 19th, officers responded to a 911 call asking for assistance with a male family member who was experiencing a mental health crisis and was, quote, actively damaging the home. The Denver Gazette reports that as officers arrived as the teen was breaking patio furniture, police body camera footage shows the teen moving toward an officer with a knife and not responding to police orders to put the knife down. According to the Denver Gazette, the officer is on paid administrative leave and the case is under review by the district attorney's office with a decision expected later in September. On Tuesday, 169 new Colorado laws went into effect. The Denver Post reports the most notable include a requirement of residents to report lost or stolen firearms, the allowance of bodies to be composted after death, the creation of a new prescription drug affordability board, and that several types of retailers must accept cash. State parks and public lands will also get more funding as a discounted state park pass will automatically be added to most new or renewed vehicle registrations. The full list of legislation passed in 2021 is available at leg.colorado.gov. Yesterday, Denver ranked fifth as having the worst air quality among cities in the world with an air quality index score of 120. This according to rankings by IQ Air. Widespread smoke is expected again today for the Denver-Boulder metropolitan region. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has issued an action day for multiple pollutants. Boulder's forecast is a high near 94 and sunny. Tonight's low will be around 60. Denver will also be sunny with a high near 95 and tonight's low around 61. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 52 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder City Council and the Boulder County Board of Commissioners will be discussing how to allocate millions in federal funding as part of the American Rescue Plan Act. Joining me now live is Shay Castle, founder of Boulder Beat News. Good morning, Shay.
Good morning.
So let's start with those ARPA funds. How much money is it and how does it have to be spent?
So Boulder will eventually receive $20 million under the ARPA funding, $10 million this year in July, and then $10 million next year in July. There's actually a wide range of things it can be spent on. Obviously, the biggest are impacts from COVID, but that covers so much because COVID impacted so much. That can be things like infrastructure. So a lot of the funding is being, well, not a lot, a little bit of the funding is being distributed to expand internet access. Boulder's has been building out its own, you know, broadband fiber internet backbone. So that's going to, the ARPA funds are going to help provide free internet to low-income communities.
And the $20 million that you mentioned, is that the city or the county of Boulder?
That's the city. That's specifically the city's share. So this is a you know, huge shot of one-time dollars. I've never seen anything like it. And the city said it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for funding. So they provided recommendations on how to spend about $5 million of it so far. That's to restore some services in the parks and library, for example, to restore some staffing, to pay staff who had to take unpaid furlough days the last year, and then some new projects, lots of, you know, childcare, healthcare access, utility assistance, rent assistance, things like that. But the largest chunk of it, you know, $15 million, they still haven't really decided how to spend yet. So that input process is going on now with the community, and they've outlined some general areas they'd like to see assistance. The things I just mentioned, you know, business assistance, things of that nature. But really, it's a very exciting time because we have all this money and most of it we haven't decided how to spend yet. So I would imagine we'll see a lot of pilot projects and things that we haven't seen in Boulder for quite some time.
Well, in that list that you just noted of infrastructure, you did mention rental assistance, but you didn't mention housing. Are there any plans to build up affordable housing in Boulder with this money?
I'm not sure if there are some, you know, service restorations and things in Housing and Human Services, which could help. But I don't know that building housing, I'm not quite sure if that falls under ARPA, because I don't know that, that's something that was impacted by COVID. Certainly people's housing situations were, and, you know, we might see, we are seeing some restoration of sheltering services through this fund. They're going to pay for the shelter beds for the unhoused that were lost during COVID. And we might be able to see some funding into, you know, transitional housing or things of that nature for the unhoused population, since they were particularly hard hit. But in terms of housing construction, I haven't seen any of those recommendations yet. But that, as I mentioned, you know, $15 million is still TBD. So what we could see, I don't quite know.
And this meeting tonight, usually they happen on Tuesdays nights. They got moved to a Thursday night this month or this week. But it's also happening at the same time as the Boulder County Commissioners meeting on the same topic. Do you know what's going on also at the county level that's going to be discussed on this very same issue of how to distribute ARPA funds?
I do not, but, you know, every local government municipality is under the same set of rules of what you can spend the money on. As I said, mostly impacts related to COVID, but also under that are some infrastructure things. The reason the city of Boulder isn't spending more of this on infrastructure is that, quite frankly, our infrastructure project needs are vastly outpaced the amount of funding that we're getting. So we probably won't see too much spending there, but as far as the county goes, and it's worth noting that Boulder County and counties in general are typically more the ones who handle Housing and Human Services needs. So, you know, they do more rental assistance and more homelessness funding typically than cities do. So I have not seen what they're proposing, but I would not be surprised if they are following a similar pattern of doing most direct assistance to, you know, people in need.
And listeners can tune in to both of those meetings tonight. They're both being held virtually online, the Boulder City Council and the Boulder Board of County Commissioners. Shay Castle of Boulder Beat News, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has launched a new COVID testing program in the state's schools. Not only is it free, but this year it also comes with incentives. Joining me to give the details is Sarah Hama, CDPHE's COVID-19 Community Testing Branch Chief. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you start off by giving an overview of the school testing program and how it works?
Sure. So the state of Colorado, we are committed to ensuring students can continue in-person learning. And with this in mind, we are providing a free and voluntary COVID-19 school screening program. And this program is available to all K-12 schools in the state. And this screening testing program is available to all staff and students. And this is regardless of their vaccination status or presence of symptoms. And we really believe that this extra layer of COVID-19 prevention will allow our Colorado schools to detect infections early and really get ahead of outbreaks. And with this in mind, we really are hoping to minimize disruptions and continue in-person learning.
About how many schools or school districts are enrolled in the program currently?
Currently, we have 435 schools that are interested and in the enrollment process. Of those, 316 schools are fully enrolled, and that is from 33 school districts.
And this testing program also comes with incentives, not only for those taking the test, but also for the schools. What are the incentives and how does the program work?
So every student who participates in this testing program will receive a $25 incentive the first time they are tested, and a $10 incentive for every subsequent test. This is limited to one incentive per week. So I know some kids out there are thinking they can get rich off this program, which you can, but only to an extent. And so we will be providing incentives in the form of a gift card. And so this will be a reloadable gift card that at the end of the month, a student will receive a gift card with the financial amount equivalent to the number of tests that they received. So if a student is tested four times in the month of September, they'd receive $25 for the first test and then $10 for the second, third, and fourth test.
And what's in it for the schools?
The schools will receive a reimbursement of $2.50 per test that is administered at their schools. And so while this program is free, we do understand that there is some costs in personnel and time in effort in partaking in this. And so we want to reimburse the schools and really thank them for their participation.
And for kids who are little, but who may be taking the tests and they may have a hard time keeping track of their gift cards or remembering to take them to school at the end of the month, is there some sort of way to help them keep track of it?
Well, first, parental consent for all those who are under the age of 18 is required. So parents will be involved and sign their students up. The consent for both the testing program and incentives happens at the same time and only needs to happen once, but parents do really have control to opt in or out at any time. And this is a reloadable gift card. So if you don't lose it, it's reloaded each month. If you do, we are able to replace it. These are mailed to the homes of the families. And so we're hoping that parents can keep an eye on it and help their little ones out.
And can you walk us through the enrollment process? I mean, is this that parents first have to sign up their kids through the schools and then enroll in the state rewards program separately, or is it automatic?
So the incentives program, there is no separate enrollment. It is all kind of packaged into one. And so a parent needs to give parental consent, which is the enrollment into both programs. And so this will come from your school if they are participating. And this will be one form that talks through what you're signing, and you'll have a place to opt in to both testing and incentives.
And just for listeners in our listening area, do the schools include those in Denver Public Schools, Boulder Valley School District, Poudre Valley School District?
No, for Denver Public Schools and Boulder Valley. I do know that we do have participating schools in the three locations you asked about. So we do have schools from the Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins areas, but those specific school districts have not enrolled. And I would love to use this opportunity to encourage school leaders and superintendents out there to consider enrolling your schools into this program.
Sarah Hema is the branch chief of the CDPHE's Community Testing Program. Thanks for joining us today, and you are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Premiering tonight outside of the Rising Star Missionary Baptist Church in Denver is a new interactive theatrical experience that is exploring the history of Black and Brown communities in Denver. Sojourner's project, Busing, is an intergenerational tale of family, community, and the political, socioeconomic landscape changes that affect how they live, learn, and love, all told using a school bus as a set. The project is a collaboration between Ideas Stages and Control Group Productions, and it is the latest iteration for Ideas Stages, which was formed last year to create lasting changes in equity and inclusivity in the Colorado theater community. KGNU's Veronica Lingo spoke with Alicia Young, the founder of Ideas Stages and the co-director of Sojourner's project, Busing.
I am the founder of Ideas Stages, which was started by the initiative of we got to keep people safe in theater. When I began Ideas, in the back of my head, I had this inkling that Ideas needs to become a theater producing entity in its own right that would then be the flagship of what our pillars are. And the pillars can be found on our website, which is ideastages.org/PILLARS. And these are just the standards that we set up. It's like, if we could find something to build theater on that was like, we will do these things to keep people safe, to be equitable, to erase white supremacy and dismantle some of the inequities that live in us because of the society and systems that we grew up in. And I must say that no, the whole thing isn't horrible, but when you have an infrastructure that makes things difficult for one person or one group of people to participate fully, then we need to, you know, look at those systems and structures. So that's what happened last year, as we began with preparing how do we go forward with doing that. And we had a call-in of the community. We did a town hall. We sent it out to all the theater companies and we're like, hey, let's have a talk. Let us show you what we think we can move forward without causing more harm. And at that meeting, Patrick Mueller of Control Group Productions was there. And Patrick and I had met previous to that with RAMASA, which is the Rocky Mountain Artists Safety Alliance. And we were integral in helping look at how can we create safety standards. And they were drawn from the Not in Our House standards. So we met then and he just said, hey, I really want to talk. And he said, I would love to see how my group can support ideas. And we got together and we just had a really deep, great conversation about how his organization, which was already set and had funding and a way to support an outside organization through collaboration, and how we could work together. And I said, okay, great. What assets do you have? What resources do you have? And he lists, like, you know, we have lights and sound and, you know, we could put on a show. And then he said, oh yeah. And before the pandemic, we purchased this bus to do a show about Denver in the apocalypse. And I was like, oh wait, you have a bus? And the wheels in my head just started churning. And I'm also an educator in the greater metro area. And I was like, there's something there about the story of busing. Let's talk about busing. We interviewed members of the community. There was another project that I was a part of, Theater Artibus, with Megan Frank and Bubabashvili. And they had done a lot of research to talk about food and community and how it draws us together. And they had like this plethora of information. And within it, people were talking about being in redlined communities, dealing with segregation, moving into integration, which wasn't really integration. It kind of was like, yeah, we'll give you a little bit, but we're going to then redraw the line and stick you back into a segregated situation. And busing came up in that too. So we talked to them and we got a lot of information and research from them also. That was the thing, is that we wanted this community centered. We wanted real voices. This is, you know, a work of fiction based on nonfiction, based on true live people's experiences. And one thing that I found compelling in the interviews that we did was that, just like you said, there's this forgetting. There were so many people who were bused and had no clue why they were bused. They just got on the bus and went to school. They had no idea why. We asked, do you know who Mrs. Rachel B. Noel is and what contributions she gave and what the Noel resolution was? No, almost 100%. There may have been one or two folks who said, yes, I knew what it was. But these were older folks, like people who are our grandparents or our parents' age, not people of the generation who were actually bused. And I thought that that was like telling of us not educating ourselves. And I blame the systems, the school system, not necessarily the people, because, you know, if no one tells you about it, you don't even know to go and look for these things.
Yeah, how do you know what you don't know?
Exactly. And that was one of the reasons why I was like, we need to do this. We need to do something on busing because we don't know our history. And this could be a supplement to what's not going on. And I'm a person that I'm not just going to sit there and point at a problem and keep saying this is a problem. I'm like, how can we find a solution? And the show is it is as interactive as it can be in the time of COVID. And then we also are providing a digital gallery of the information, because there is a plethora of information out there. And we put it all that we found. There's so much more in one place where you can just take a QR code and it's on our website and you can flip through it. The Sojourners Live website, you can flip through it and see who Barney Ford is. The grandfather in the show is named after Barney Ford. You can find out what the NOLA resolution was. You can find out what a HBCU college and university is. So yeah, that's how we're attacking the problem.
Sojourners Project Busing is now playing Thursdays through Sundays until September 26th. You can find more information at sojourners.live. And later this afternoon on Metro, KGNU's Dave Ashton will take a deep dive into this show and discuss the history behind this work and the creative team that is bringing it to life. That's today at 3 p.m. here on KGNU. And that does it for today's Morning Magazine here on listener-supported community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, and Veronica Strait-Lingo for their contributions to today's program, and to Rosanna Longobetter for production support.